It's time for Mac Break Weekly. The quarterly results are in for Apple's first quarter, the holiday buying quarter. And boy, are they good, even though Wall Street didn't like them too much. We'll talk about that with our panel next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 387, recorded January 28th, 2014. Like a man. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have your entire financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/MacBreak. And by LegalZoom.com. Visit LegalZoom to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak1. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Look, we've reassembled the crew. In fact, somebody said in the chat room, it's so true, if Merlin Mann were only here, then the band would be complete. It'd be like the Beatles reunion at the Grammys. But unfortunately, of course, Merlin is no longer with us, and Scott Bourne. But we have the wonderful Andy Iannocco, who's been with his show almost since the beginning, I believe.
You're making it sound like the Hunger Games, only with like tech news.
It's like we put a pile.
All right, Alex, you've been training in the high altitudes of Rwanda, but you know what?
Put a pile of weapons in the middle of the studio.
Colonial guerrilla warfare.
By the way, Merlin is not dead. He's no longer with us. He's here in the world. Alex Lindsay is the guy who created MacBreak before I even did anything with it. He did the video version of MacBreak, and you were, I think, the guy who suggested we do MacBreak Weekly as an audio program.
I think we actually did it for a little while before. You were involved in a couple of the early MacBreaks, and then even in the audio, I believe. And then the problem is every time you were on the audio one, it was so much more popular, and I was like, you should just take this. here, have this.
So there you go. There you go. And where are? And by the way, speaking of there you go, where are you?
I am in Washington D.C.
Is this your new facility?
This is our other office. It's not really new. It's been around for a little while. I'll show you. Hold on. Let's see. So this is when you really get crazy about running Hangouts. You have a facility that looks like that.
Oh man.
So that's the control room. Now that can bring in fiber, satellite, from all over the world.
What kind of pipes do you have in there? I mean,
it's 100 by 100 up and down, but then we have video pipes. So we can use either the switch or Vivix or AVOC, HD fiber, and then we also have 26 26 satellite dishes on the roof that we don't own them all, but we have access to them.
So you can book them when you need them, is basically how.
Yeah, we just book them. We can book satellite time up and down from the roof.
And I'm I don't know. Are we allowed to say what you're doing, or is that a secret?
No, we're not allowed to say.
Okay.
So basically,
when the Whig Party wants to do their response to the State of the Union, there's going to be a guy awkwardly sitting in your studio. And now for the Federalist response.
We do a lot of work for the Whig Party. We're obviously doing some stuff here that I have to manage. But we do a lot of things here. Basically, we run almost all of our major Hangouts out of this facility. There's all the servers in the back there, you can see. And then there's a whole other set of servers that sit in the tech core. This is where actually all the European television stations are hosted. So all the way down the hallway from here is, you know, Russia One, and then there's Belgian One, and then there's Deutsch something or other, and BBC is upstairs. And so it's a pretty densely populated building.
Neato.
Yeah.
Are you across from the White House, or like, are you there? Where are you?
We're about eight blocks from the White House, but the fiber from the White House terminates about 100 feet from this office.
Can you smell the big block of cheese from there? No. All right, I'm moving on. Thank you, Alex Lindsay, and also Renee Ritchie here from iMore.com. And he is sitting in front of the vintage Apple TV, the original Apple TV.
My setup just seems so meager now.
I know. I know.
I have like a webcam. I have a cable modem.
I know. We all are put to shame by Alex Lindsay.
That's he's like in NORAD.
It's worse for me because he's also got an office, you know, right here in the building. And I look at what we do, then I go over there, and it's like, oh, dear. It's like
it keeps you warm, though.
Well, see, I'm all jealous because you do the same thing in the same place every day.
Every day.
And it's just like you just go, oh, my gosh, if I could just get up and just turn the stuff on, I don't have to put it in Pelican cases, and I don't have to, you know. Last night I was at Dulles, you know, schlepping six 100-pound cases in and out.
Oh, man.
Sometimes I just wish I could just work at Twit and just show up.
By the way, Beatmaster tells me that, Renee, you actually put an article on iMore about your podcast setup. So if people want to know what Renee's using.
Yeah, not after Alex.
Don't bring that up now, he says. Why are you bringing that up now? Hey, an update on the Mac Pro. And I'm curious because I think I'm the only one in the bunch who actually has one. Thanks to Ed Ingbar, who very kindly let me buy his from him. This is the new, cylinder Mac Pro. Where was that picture from? That was a good picture because it's exactly what it looks like.
This is from John. John's leaning to send this over an email, and it's all German. You can see, Blu-ray.
I'm going to bring a picture of my Mac Pro because it's exactly what it looks like on the right. So on the left, you see the cheese grater, which has everything internal. And in fact, all right, it's big, but it does look kind of tidy. On the right, you see the elegant Mac Pro with three, G-Tech drives next to it, a CD burner, DVD burner, a USB hub, all the crap you need to go along with
it. So apparently from giga.de.
So let me just mention a couple of things. And maybe, Renee, because you have been keeping up on the Mavericks bugs, and I think these are related. Audio comes and goes randomly.
Core Audio is not your friend.
That's Core Audio. Okay, that's a Mavericks bug. Now I can't, I use a Magic Trackpad wireless and a wireless keyboard, and they just stopped working. Bluetooth is on. I haven't gone to the point of trying Bluetooth on other stuff, but I just can't get my keyboard and trackpad to mount. I actually had to buy a wired keyboard and a USB mouse. Is that a known?
I haven't heard of that yet. My good friend and co-host Guy English got his Mac Pro, and he said it is the best Gotham Arkham Asylum game playing machine he's ever had.
I will vouch for that. BioShock Infinite, wonderful. Turn everything up.
Yeah, but we haven't dived too deeply into it yet because it's so scarce still.
Of course, I changed the batteries on the keyboard and trackpad. You think I'm nuts?
You know, we just recorded a couple of the MacBreak studios, for Final Cut and Motion with we got a loaner for a Mac Pro over at the office. I mean, just for a day, to do it. Mark Spencer brought it in, and I can say for Final Cut, it's screaming.
I bet.
Like four times faster. I mean, stuff that the laptop was just chugging on. I mean, like a really nice, well-built Retina that it just kind of just breezes through like nothing happened. It just cuts it right through like butter.
And you mentioned that you wanted to try it, so I'm going to bring mine in for you Saturday.
Yeah, I want to try it because I want to play with it on 3D. That we were doing the video stuff is all great. Now, what I want to do is to open up something like Cinema 4D and look at how it renders global illumination and that type of thing.
Yeah,
not just using Cinebench, but really playing around with it.
And you heard that one of your people said that it spontaneously was shutting down on him.
Yeah, we've had a couple of folks say that they're having this issue where it just kind of restarts. So we're not really sure exactly. It definitely had us, when we heard the report of a couple of folks that I knew saying that, we were like, maybe we won't make it a live event box just yet. So that's obviously, restarting is fine if you're doing post, if it happens really instantly. And, it's concerning, but not the end of the world. On a live event, it would be unfortunate.
Well, I love, as you know, you saw the final cam. I love it, like a man, like a woman. But that's actually an in-joke around here because we had a woman on the radio show who called up, and she was from Chicago. She was great. And she was saying, I got rid of my iPhone, and I'm now using a Note 3. I said, oh, that's the big one. You like it? She says, I don't like it. I love it like a man. So I've been saying that it actually works really great all the time now. Every time I finish all my sentences, like a man.
I loved her on 227. I thought that she was the linchpin of that show.
Anyway, just an update on the Mac Pro. I'm not sure. I would recommend against it. You know, if you need it, you know it, and you probably want it. But maybe it's a Mavericks problem. I don't know.
We're giving it some time. You know, we know that there's a little bit of time to wait for it, and we're not in a real rush. We're just going to let things sort themselves out, and then casually, you know, get them when a quietly a version 2 or 3 is already running.
I think that's sensible. With anything, but this is new hardware, and it does seem like there might be some issues early on. So I think it would be sensible. The good news is you can't get it till March anyway.
So. And if you go to iMore right now, Peter Cohen just put up an article about his least favorite Mavericks pet peeves.
Oh, I'm
so
sure there are a few.
He's got the core audio in there. He's got a bunch of little things that make you pull your hair out that we really hope Apple fixes in the next update.
Apple's first quarter results are in. This is, of course, the big holiday shopping quarter, and a big, big story. We will break it down for you. All the numbers, all the news coming up in just a bit. Renee Ritchie, Alex Lindsay, Andy Iannacco. You're watching Mac Break Weekly. Our show today brought to you by PersonalCapital.com. You know, this is really, I think people might think this isn't something I need yet because I'm young. I'm just starting out or whatever. I don't have a lot of money, so I don't have to worry about investments. You always should be paying attention to this stuff. Personal Capital lets you keep track of your money. Not like a checkbook balancing program, but like making sure your financial life is planned out. And that's a pain. I never did it before. In fact, I wish I'd done it a little bit better when I was younger. There are two kind of big problems with people and how they manage their money. One, it's hard to keep track of. Not only do you have your paycheck, but you probably have a 401k or an IRAs. You've got bank accounts. You've got mortgages, charge cards, all of that. All on different sites, different names and passwords. The other problem, of course, is if you do want to make investments, you're paying somebody to manage your money, and you're probably paying too much. Along comes Personal Capital. It's free. You see all of your financial life on one screen, how each asset's performing. Your computer, they also have iPhone and iPad apps. Clean, color-coded graphs. Shows you how much you're paying in money managers and fees. You know, just the fees on your mutual funds. How you can reduce those. You can also get specific advice on how to improve your investment strategy. This is all free. Personal Capital. It's a smart way to make your money grow quicker. That's why they've been featured in Time, Forbes, Bloomberg, and more. And we're going to get you a free count right now if you go to personalcapital.com/MacBreak. Getting set up just takes a minute. It's free, but you have to go to personalcapital.com. In fact, let me do that. /MacBreak. And sign up today. That way we get people, they know that you heard it on the show. And you get extra special treatment. PersonalCapital.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support. Apple has a lot of money to keep track of themselves. I wonder if they're using Personal Capital. $159 in the bank. That's my bank account. $159 billion in their bank account. Interesting, Peter Oppenheimer, the CFO on the call, said 70% of that is international, which shows you why it's very difficult for Apple to repatriate it, either to buy stuff or to give it back to stockholders. There's huge tax consequences to repatriating that money. Record quarterly revenue, $57.6 billion. Record net profit, $13.1 billion. To put that in perspective, Microsoft, which announced its results a few days earlier, was half that much profit. And the stock market didn't like it for a few reasons. Net profit was not up. It was exactly the same as year to year, $13.1 billion. The gross margins were down a little bit, 37.9% compared to 38.6%. International sales accounted for 63% of the quarter's revenue. I think that's interesting. Now, that's what the stock market cares about. Here's the numbers we care about. Actually, the stock market might care about this a little bit. Analysts were predicting 55 million iPhones in the quarter, 51 million sold. That's probably, if you were going to pick one thing that's worrying the market, that might be it. However, it's a record number of iPhones, more than this time last year, 47.8 million. They sold 26 million iPads, also an all-time quarterly record, compared to 22.9 million a year ago. Mac sales were up. This is something I'm a Mac lover. And the Mac sales went from 4.1 million last year to 4.8 million this year. Now, you compare 4.8 million Macs to a total of 77 million iOS devices. It's not that important to the bottom line. But thoughts? Those are the numbers. Well,
I think that the difference between what the projections were and what they actually sold as far as the numbers for the iPhones most likely had to deal with supply chain issues because I think
that's what that Peter Oppenheimer said. We could have sold more. We had constrained supply until the very end of the quarter.
So I think that they probably would have met it. It wasn't from a lack of demand. It was just a lack of. And I think the same thing, you probably saw lower numbers with the Mac Pro sales, both because it was a late release as well as a very constrained supply. So I think that those are two things that were probably factors here. I do find it amazing that everyone's disappointed when they have. I mean, how many records can you set?
I know.
I guess you're expected to have a record year. Every quarter should be a record quarter, which is almost what it is for Apple. Almost every single.
We should point out Apple stock is over $500. It's very well valued. It's not that the market is saying, "Oh my God, this company's in trouble." But it did drop 8% in after-hours trading. It's now down 7.63%.
It doesn't enjoy the ratio that a stock like Amazon or even Google's enjoys, which bothers some people.
The price-to-earnings ratio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's expensive. It's an expensive stock.
But they were also upset about Apple's guidance, even though Oppenheimer did a fairly good job explaining, you know, things like they're deferring much more income now for iPhones, and they're also doing it for Macs because Mavericks is free, iWork is free, iLife is free. So that means billions of dollars move from one quarter to the next. But I think a lot of people just look at the raw numbers and say, oh, it's not as much as I'd like it to be
right.
For next quarter.
I do think also that one of the things that they showed was a rise in the ASP, average sell price. So I think that was an interesting selling price, I believe, which is interesting that they're getting more out of a lot of these than they had in the past.
But margins are going down.
Right.
Margins were down, but they said the margins would go back up because they've gotten better at making the stuff. The
right.
iPhone 5C did not sell as well as they expected because the iPhone 5S sold better than they expected. And Tim Cook said that was because of Touch ID and some of the new, what the Apple calls the forward-thinking features like 64-bit and the better camera.
I also don't think $100 really distinguishes the 5C from the 5S. That was the number one problem. Go ahead, Randy.
I was just going to say that was it's the way to turn a negative into a positive, saying, well, we didn't sell as many 5Cs because we sold so many 5Ss. It was the positive touch. I think I agree with Alex that $99 is not a huge difference for people who are attracted to iPhones in general. I think that I'm inclined to take away the impression that people who buy iPhones do it with very clear intentions and very clear purposes. They don't just buy it because they have their sights set on an iPhone. And if you give them two iPhones side by side and tell them this one is better than this one, which is the budget one, they are going to spend the $99 to get the better one. And they are not having as much success competing with the people who don't really care, who don't really see those distinctions, for whom they're going to say, well, why is this $99? I can get a phone that looks exactly like this, that has a great software library for $50 or free. And they're still not going to be reaching those people. But it's likely they're never going to reach those people.
Yeah, I think it's fine for Apple to say, hey, we're the high price spread and live with it. It's very tough. I just bought a 32 gig unlocked Moto X unsubsidized for $350, brand new.
Yeah.
With a wood back.
That's going to be, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure from Android in 2014 that wasn't there in 2013, because the second half of last year was the time when lots of different major makers started making a priority to creating an affordable bring your own device. And with so many, especially in the US at least, with T-Mobile and other providers providing so many really great plans for people who bring their own devices in, I wonder how much pressure Apple's going to feel to deal with these people that would much rather spend $350, $400, even $200 to own their own Android device and then take it wherever they want off of contract versus $200, you're locked in, and the differences between these handsets are becoming a little bit more fine-grained than they were in 2012, say.
there was a really good piece from Benedict Evans, who's a telecom analysis analyst, and he's actually just moving to the U.S. He got a job with an investment firm, but he did the math on, based on current volume, what Apple could expect to generate, like how many iPhones they can sell before they start to hit the roof. And it's still something like, you know, it's in the hundreds of millions, half a billion, and that's still a huge market, bigger than any, you know, previous PC market. But he was also pointing out that it's changing so fast that he has no idea, for example, what install an app on an Android smartphone will mean in a couple of years, and that it's hard to judge whether you should go lower in a market or higher in a market because it's changing so rapidly now still.
Apple's guidance for the second quarter, revenue between $42 and $44 billion, gross margin, not much change, between 37% and 38%. They pointed out that their tax rate is 26.2%. So there, we pay taxes. So there. And when you have a profit of $13.1 billion, that's a pretty big check you're writing to Uncle Sam every year. I think I'm showing my Mac bias here, my bias towards, you know, the computer. But in a quarter where PC sales were down 10%, for Apple to report an increase of something like 30% is pretty good news. It kind of gives lie to the idea that people aren't buying computers anymore.
Well, but I think that also that there's the numbers for Apple to have are growing are much smaller than the general PC numbers.
Yes.
So I think that
like a hundredth.
So they can, you know, in the vertical that buys a Mac, you know, obviously people are still buying those. I think that they're not competing as much. I don't think Macintoshes don't compete as much with iPads, you know, for instance, as a netbook does, or lower cost, you know, computers. I think that, or, and I'm not saying iPads, but also just, you know, a lot of tablets, a lot of people moving towards tablets for those types of things. And so I think that, you know, I definitely use my Mac for what I think it has to be used for. You know, and I think that there's a lot of people that are doing that. It's not just to check email.
I think you got to say that Windows 8 is a flop, and people are not. There were lots of reasons why people aren't buying PCs, but Windows 8 has to be a part of it.
Well, I think that you always have to remember that the Windows market is totally different from the Mac market. Yeah. A Windows notebook looks like a MacBook, but it's a totally different type of person who's buying it with totally different priorities. When you look at the pie chart for Windows operating systems that are in the field, a huge chunk of it is still Windows XP. And I think it's more significant to see how well Windows 7 is doing, because right now that is perceived by the Windows community as, here is the non-experimental, the tried and true, the tested. We've been through this. We've been through the upgrade. We've gotten people trained up on this operating system.
No, you're right.
That's doing very, very well. And you're also
seeing it is. In fact, Windows 7 sales were up in the quarter.
Yeah, exactly. And especially now that more makers are. Yes, understanding that Windows 8 has not been, there are very few people getting Windows 8 tattoos, let's say. And so now more makers are going back to, okay, you know what? Why don't we start offering our new hardware pre-installed with Windows 7 instead of 8? And woof, people are trusting.
HP really spit in Microsoft's face saying, back by popular demand, Windows 7 in a big ad this week.
The big difficulty is that you sell Windows 8 by selling the multi-touch and selling a touchscreen device. But unfortunately, Microsoft has not been able to get enough developers on board to really say, well, here are the really awesome apps that you would want to run on Windows 8 that could not really exist very well under Windows 7. And when you get people who are not terribly interested in multi-touch on a laptop, then they see this as Windows 7 with more unfamiliar stuff on it. So there's a key cultural debate going on that is fascinating to track, which is, do people want a convergence device? Do people want to spend $800 on one device that does it all? Especially now that we have devices that cost about the same as a nicely loaded iPad that are not that heavier than an iPad, they get the same battery life as an iPad. Or just philosophically, do they believe that I want to own a tablet and a notebook? I want to own a device that is specifically optimized for notebook things. And then I want a tablet that even has a smaller screen than a full-sized iPad, that's even lighter than a full-sized iPad. Because when I'm in tablet mode, I want something as far away from my conventional laptop experience as I can possibly get. So people like me like to think, well, but geez, why? It's kind of it offends my delicate, you know, neorealist sensibilities to be carrying two computers with me as a check and carry on. I think most people are now proving that they're actually kind of cool with it. They'd much rather have a full size regular laptop and a sidecar in the form of a tablet.
Well, and if that's you, there's very good news. Jason Snell, on the occasion of the 30th anniversary of the Mac, got to talk to Phil Schiller, Craig Federighi, and Bud Triple about a lot of things. But if you scroll down a little ways in the interview, he asks Craig Federighi, who is now in charge of all software, and that might indicate that Apple's thinking of merging iOS and OS X, about that. And Federighi said, absolutely not. He says the reason OS X has a different interface than iOS isn't because one came after the other or because this one's old and this one's new. It's because using a mouse and keyboard isn't the same as tapping with your finger. This device, he says, pointing at a MacBook Air, has been honed over 30 years to be optimal for keyboards and mice. Schiller and Federighi both made clear Apple believes competitors, in other words, Microsoft, who try to attach a touchscreen to a PC or a clamshell keyboard onto a tablet are barking up the wrong tree. They say there will not be a convergence. To say iOS and OS X should be the same independent of their purpose, let's just converge for the sake of convergence, it's absolutely a non-goal. This is Federighi again. You don't want to say the Mac became less good at being a Mac because someone tried to turn it into iOS. I have to say that's a great relief because after seeing what happened with Windows, it's pretty clear that's not where you want to go.
Apple's never said that they're never going to do something and then do it.
He said it's he didn't even say they were never going to. He said it's a non-goal, which is
there's so many things that Apple's classic. Like, no one's ever going to want that, and then they make one.
They didn't blend classic Mac OS with the Newton OS either. I mean, what they gave an answer that is specific to this time and this frame of thinking, but I think that answer has been way too broadly interpreted.
Phil Schiller said it's not an either or. It's a world where you're going to have, as Andy said, a phone, a tablet, a computer, and you don't have to choose. So what's more important, and I like this philosophy, is how you seamlessly move between them all. Now, if they could only get AirDrop to work between iOS and OS X, I'd believe them. Not like this is a laptop person and that's a tablet person. It doesn't have to be that way. When I walked in, they noticed I'd brought a phone, a tablet, and a laptop and used my Air as the tool of choice for the interview. You had a bunch of tools, Craig said, and you pulled out the one that felt right for the job you were doing. Not because it had more computing power, because it was the most natural device. That other thinking. I agree. It's not,
You purchased three things from us, not just one. That pleases us greatly, Mr. Snell. You will be invited back.
I do think that's absolutely on the money. I don't think that people are ready yet to really fully cast their lot with one device being a multi-touch,
Yeah.
However, I do think the momentum is heading there. And this is something we've discussed before, that we get more people who are entering the adult job market who grew up with multi-touch, that they just don't have to think of their input device as primarily keyboard. They are more open to simply saying, well, what if I just take this device I spend $600 for, this iPad, and figure out how to do all of my editing, all of my creation, and really all my communications through it. It's possible that they're moving away from having multiple mobile devices and towards having, I'm going to have one really nice server at my house for applications and documents. I'm going to have one desktop for full bore desktop crunch mode. But for every time that I'm not inside my office, I'm going to have something that is lightweight that can access all my data and all my apps.
When I look at my kids again, you know, they're constantly, I mean, you can definitely see any laptop they touch has all these little fingerprints all the way across them because they're so used to their iOS.
Every time I try to use an iPad to do the stuff that I would do on a computer, like let's say booking a reservation or, you know, stuff it always feels like it's a strain. I can do it, but it's hard.
Yeah.
You're hammering nails with a screwdriver.
I think it also, if you're using a web page and trying to do that, it's really painful. I know that I book a lot of hotels on hotels.com on my iPhone because I'll be sitting there thinking about, oh, I got to do this. And because everything's kind of built into it, like if I go to a web page, it would be, I don't know, it would take me half a day and I'd never bother. But an app that is built for that has your information all built into it and everything else, it actually is.
Yeah, but that means you need an app for every damn thing you do.
Well, anything you do regularly, yeah. I have a lot of apps.
Will there be a 30th anniversary of iOS where we had 30th anniversary of the Mac? That's what I keep wondering.
Oh, that's
will it
interesting.
Be as long a product cycle, or will it change much more rapidly?
2037.
Well, the Mac OS has changed pretty dramatically.
I will be dead, you understand, but
since version 1. I remember getting excited about Mac OS. What?
But has it? When you if you were to take a look at a screenshot of system 1.2 or 1.1, whatever shipped with the Mac 128, and put it next to Mavericks right now, and put an iMac next to a Mac 128, in terms of molecular interface to the human being, you still have screen over here, keyboard over here, input device right here. You still have Windows. The Finder is still largely untouched. There's been a huge amount of power added to it, but you're still overlapping windows that drag around that people have to manage manually, and icons on the desktop that become way too cluttered when you've got way too much data on it. So Apple, I think, is wise enough to understand the value of the legacy that the Mac has and the value of the legacy that iOS has. But they may have been free at one point to simply say, when we get to Mac OS 11, don't expect to see the Finder in any way, shape, or form. And don't expect to see the same control surfaces and the same control inputs the way that we've always done them. I think that I don't want to preempt my pick of the week, but iOS 7 is a really good release for people to look at when they're looking at Apple's core philosophy on developing things. At some point, they said that our old interface now sucks. It was working for a great amount of time. It took us where we wanted to go. But now we are willing to piss off a great deal of people, by a great percentage of our users, by giving them something unfamiliar that will look very, very freaky, in the hopes that it will prompt our entire community to adopt to a vision of user interface that we really, really like. And although the pain point was pretty severe in the fall when iOS 7 was first widely released, now that we've got 3 or 4 months or 5 months behind us, and now that we've got developers who have been spending more than close to a year, not only just looking at the user interface guidelines, but seriously thinking, well, we're going to throw away our entire interface and now rebuild it with these new guidelines. Now, finally, here in January of 2014, we're starting to see apps that really bear fruit, that really sell the idea of iOS 7, that you really couldn't articulate in that way in iOS 6. So I think that maybe we're going to be going that same way. I think Mac OS is going to have that point too. It'll still be called Mac OS, but there's going to be that point where we no longer recognize it as window here, icon here, drop down menu there, pointing device, keyboard, here's the screen.
Tell you one thing. Yes, Patrick Delahanty points out in our chat room yesterday, 4th anniversary of the iPad. So 30th anniversary is 26 years off. We got a ways to go. One thing that may not make it to its 30th anniversary, the iPod. Yeah. Sales of the iPod down 52%. They sold a mere 6 million iPods. That's $973 million out of their $57.6 billion revenue. I don't know when they're going to kill the iPod, but they didn't mention it. There were no new iPods this year. They didn't mention it, you know, all year long. I think it's soon. It's soon, isn't it?
Well, they switched it to a 2-year product cycle a couple of years ago. They do a revision when they do the new design for the iPhone, and then they do a new color when they do the S version of the iPhone. So this year we got space gray. But this to me highlights what we were talking about earlier about Apple's vision for products. They some companies would have held on to the iPod revenue, you know, until it fell out of their cold dead hands. They would have ridden it into the ground, and they would have spent all their time and energy trying to prop it up. Where Apple's kind of recognizes the iPod is going down, and they fill it on one end with the iPhone, on the other end with an iPad, and then an iPad Mini. So in one way, I lament that it is going away. But on the other hand, we have much better options now. Yeah. We have connected devices and large screen devices, and soon they'll have capacity beyond what an iPod could have.
Yeah,
I have to say I love iPod touches, which I have. We use them as like these little utility vehicles, you know, like, so we don't really use them as a viewer or to play music. But, you know, a lot of our kits have them. I have a couple of them, and I'll use them for clocks and interfaces and other things that I want to kind of pop up as heads up displays. And they're just very inexpensive and very small. And you can carry a couple of them to kind of manage stuff. And I just find that they're great little like mini trucks. They're kind of like golf carts to handle a lot of things.
Yeah, that's a more apt analogy.
I think that Apple is definitely taking a user like you and saying, well, why don't you buy an iPad mini, which is even better. Also doesn't require a monthly data plan if you don't want to buy the 4G version or the LTE version of it.
A lot of them, when we're overseas, a lot of our guys use them as phones, because with FaceTime audio, you know, a lot of people are just calling out,
Of course, you're an outlier once again, sir, and it doesn't. I mean,
I know.
But the other cool thing is that how many apps do we all have on our phones right now that are used as remote controls for other interfaces for other devices we have in our office and in our house?
Right.
So, I mean, I would certainly be interested. I would certainly be interested in like buying a next generation iPod Touch, if only as this is going to be the device that will always be my Roku interface, will always be my cable box interface, it will always be my Sling box interface.
I mean, that's sort of stuff. Most people just say, "Well, I got the iPhone in my pocket." Remember, Steve Jobs called the iPhone the best iPod we've ever made when he introduced it. They knew. In fact, 2009, Oppenheimer on an analyst call said, "We know we're cannibalizing our iPod sales. That's part of the plan."
That's a core philosophy of Apple. They believe that the only product that is worthy of cannibalizing sales of an Apple product is a newer Apple product.
Another Apple product.
And that was the iPhone 5C as well, was, you know, because it's got the packaging of an iPod now. It's got the colors of an iPod now. And it didn't perform to what levels they wanted it to. But the desire was for that to be the next popular sort of iOS device.
That's an interesting topic, though, and I'm not creating a conclusion here. I'm legitimately curious about this. That I wonder if Apple decided to not package the 5C as like an iPod like device, but made it look as close to the 5S as possible. Is part of what was throwing people the fact that you'll be broadcasting to the entire world that no, you don't have the good one, you have the cheap plastic one. I don't know if Apple users are vulnerable to that kind of thinking, or if they really do want the slick nice device, so they don't want to have the iPhone Junior.
So he said that iPhone 5C represented a smaller mix. This is Tim Cook. Smaller mix of total handset sales. It was the demand was different than we thought.
Different.
Yeah, they really thought it was going to be the popular iPhone. I told him my mom. It's the first phone she ever bought. Sorry, she had a Samsung flip phone before. It's the first smartphone she ever bought because she saw the commercial Better Together and she thought it was Andy Warhol and the nicest thing she'd ever seen. And she still thinks it's way better than the iPhone 5S. And Apple believed that it was going to be the popular iPhone, that people would like the colors and they'd like the plastic being more durable, and it would be a funner, maybe more kid-friendly, maybe, you know, more non-tech-savvy, person-friendly device.
Do you think the Wall Street Journal got it right? They claim that this year Apple will scrap the 5C. There will be two new iPhone models, according to the Journal, with larger displays, one bigger than 5 inches, and they're not going to be any plastic-backed iPhones in the lineup.
As far as I know, there's not two bigger iPhones in the pipeline. There's one. So I don't know how far they're looking out. I mean, Apple experiments with all sorts of different sizes, and they could have, you know, the full range of Samsung sizes in the lab. But as far as I know, there's one bigger one in the works. And I don't know if they'll scrap the 5C or they'll still have some device that fills the slot below whatever the premium iPhone is. Whether plastic didn't work out and they go back to something else, whether they have something completely different in mind is another story. But instead of looking at them like certain devices, Apple has certain slots that they want to fill. And they're usually fairly consistent about those.
Yeah, I agree. January is way too early to feel as though they've got a real beat on what Apple's going to be shipping in the fall, especially where handsets are concerned. But yeah, I don't think there's anybody listening who seriously believes that Apple is not going to be shipping a larger screen phone at this point. If they do not ship a seriously large screen iPhone in 2014, they will be making a really explicit statement about they don't think the time is right. It's not as though they believe it's aesthetically unpleasing. It's not that the infrastructure and the developer infrastructure isn't there yet. It's because they fundamentally believe that a phone should not be larger than this size. And I don't think they believe that.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of people for whom the phone is becoming the primary computer. They don't want a laptop. They don't even want a tablet. And in emerging markets, it might be because they can't afford it. But in a lot of established markets, they just don't want to have the inconvenience. They want to have a device that the phone button is there, but it's not the primary thing that they want to use. And for them, the bigger, if Apple's goal is to make better mainstream products year after year, it's almost inescapable what the conclusion now is. A larger screened iPhone would be a better mainstream product. It would increase their addressable market. The analogy I like to draw is the iPhone used to be on AT&T, and you had to choose between AT&T's iPhone or getting something else on Verizon. And then the iPhone went to Verizon, and you no longer had to choose. You could get an iPhone on Verizon. Right now, you have to choose between an iPhone and a larger screen device from another manufacturer. And those are premium devices. They're not discount budget devices for the most part. And Apple is going to want people to choose a larger screen device that is from Apple if they want to keep that premium segment of the market.
So the journal says that the 4.5-inch model is further along in development, according to their sources, and is being prepared for mass production now. The bigger than 5-inch, however much bigger than 5-inch, is still in preliminary development. But you say your sources don't agree with this.
Well, I mean, it depends how early preliminary is. Like I said, there's all sorts of sizes in the labs. The fact that one of them is ready and the other one isn't is much more consistent.
Do you think Apple will stick to its release cycle this year, or might they? I mean, they're completely capable of changing it up.
They can release an iPhone Aroli in June if they want to. I mean, they can do anything they like. It's the benefit of their model. They don't pre-announce and they do all their own stuff. But it makes sense given the market conditions that they have that they'll want to stick to a fairly. I mean, they'll change it if they have to. They might even change it just to be a little bit renegade and rogue once in a while. Or if the previous device was, you know, not great, like an iPad 3 necessitated an iPad 4 6 months later.
Right.
But all other things being equal, they're usually pretty good on their yearly schedule.
You don't think that the disappointing results with the 5C are enough reason for them to do something different sooner?
Do we know if the 5C sold worse than if the 5 had been down
$100
or compared to what the 4S sold last? I mean, we don't know what those results are.
They didn't break down those numbers, right? We have no idea. It's different.
There's still people coming in to buy iPhone 5Ss, and on that basis, there is not a problem that Apple needs to solve with an earlier phone release.
Right. Apple did pay out $2 billion to developers in the first quarter. That's a nice chunk of change.
It was amazing how their message over and over again was that we are number one. I mean, like they said that iOS 7 is the most popular operating system. We're paying out the most to developers. We have the highest usage demographics. More people are shopping on the iPhone. It was over and over again. They hammered the fact that I don't want to say it was elitist saying that our customers are better than Android customers, but they were making the argument that value is to be had on the iPhone platform.
Who is that message for? Is that for developers, that message? Is it for...
At WWDC, it's for developers. At these calls, it's for investors.
It's for investors.
Yeah. Well, and I think that also...
Does Apple think it's important to get that message to consumers? We're number one?
No, I don't know if the consumer needs to know, but I do think that it is important for them to distinguish raw sales numbers from actual impact. So I think that that's definitely something that they were trying to distinguish there, is that, you know, we get that a lot of people are buying Androids, but when you actually look at their usage rates, their, you know, how many apps they're buying, all those other things, then the iPhone or the iOS environment still is superior according to them.
We're number one where it counts.
I've always felt that's a really odd metric for them to really trumpet, because for one, there was one piece of snake oil in the announcement talking about the single digit adoption rate for Android KitKat, which requires that little asterisk and that footnote that says, yeah, it's not available. It's only available for Google branded devices yet, which is in itself a very, very tiny sliver of the market. When they release the code and make it available for the entire marketplace, then you start to look at that. But I don't think they've really made the point of we're giving you lots of numbers that hopefully tell you that there are more people using our devices than other devices. I don't think they're making the statement of why it makes our brand more valuable to you, the investor, or how it makes our devices more useful to you, the user, because it's nice to see how many billions of dollars are being paid to developers. But is it indicative of a huge app marketplace in which there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of valuable apps? Or does it mean that a few game developers that essentially know how to build a nice phone-based slot machine, sometimes in the guise of a Smurf Bay game or a Simpsons game, or is it just something as simple as that?
So it is more than the 300% growth over this time last year paid out to developers. That's a big jump.
I just think, okay, nice for the developers, but I realize this is an analyst call. This is not an Apple commercial, but a lot of people are going to be writing coverage based on that and drawing their own conclusions based on that. So I think that I wish that Apple would spend some time really communicating how that benefits people who have money in their pocket and they want to spend it in an Apple store.
Here's the consumer number that you will care about. 92%, according to a recent survey, 92% of Apple revenue comes from in-app purchases, free apps with in-app purchases, 4% paid apps, and the remaining 4% from apps with
which I think is amazing, because the whole freemium thing drives me crazy.
Yeah, but apparently it's the way to make money. It's what you want to do.
Like, I stopped playing Plants vs. Zombies. It was too much. Yeah. It was like, you know, but the in-app purchase for Field Runners doesn't bother me at all. I don't know why, but I mean, the Field Runners one, it's like, if I want to get some extra whatever that I want to use, you know, but the way that they implemented it, I think in something like Plants vs. Zombies, as I said, was a total turnoff.
You can't turn your back though. If 92% of all the money Apple makes is coming from paid freemium in-app.
So that could be changing that model.
That ain't going to change.
No.
But you're right. I think the key is to make it palatable for end users that don't not to feel like they're a cash machine.
And it definitely looks like, you know, because we're about to, you know, move much more heavily into software development. I mean, we do some software development, but we just hired a good programmer, and we're going to be doing a lot more of that. And we're definitely, as we think about the structure of how we're building it, that kind of data has really affected it. Like, oh, we're going to build one really cool core app, and then we're going to add things to it. And then people can basically a la carte the things that they think that are important based on what we're doing, you know. So I do think that it has definitely affected the way a lot of developers think, including myself.
We don't do our own Twit apps. We rely on the kindness of strangers. But if I were Houdini 7 or one of the developers who develops Twit apps, I would give the app away and charge, like, maybe, hey, for a buck you can get bundles. Be like a cable company. You want the Mac bundle? You get i5, Mac Break Weekly, and iPad Today. You want, you know, like that.
It's interesting. I mean, one thing, I think they gave out those numbers because there's a lot of market share numbers floating around about how Android is so massive that developers will inevitably turn towards Android first. And they made the comment over and over again that games are launching on iPhone still, and exclusive games like Clumsy Ninja are doing well. But also, Plants vs. Zombie had their biggest launch ever as an iPhone exclusive. And for the in-app purchase stuff, I mean, that's all of our fault. I mean, developers race to the bottom. We said we wouldn't pay $10 for an app. We said we wouldn't give you know, even $5 for a racing game. But boy, we'll give you $100 if you let us get our cars back on the track faster.
You know what, so I'd pay $5 for? Yeah. No NSA backdoor in my Angry Birds. I think that would be nice. How about that? Did you see that?
They denied that this morning.
I had a hard time figuring out exactly how that was implemented.
According to this is another Snowden leak coming out from the Guardian. U.S. and U.K., they include the GCHQ in this, the U.K. spy agency, piggyback on apps. They specifically called out Angry Birds and Google Maps. The data pouring onto communication networks from the new generation of iPhone and Android apps ranges from phone model and screen size to personal detail like age, gender, and location. Some apps, according to the leak, can share users' most sensitive information, sexual orientation, sexual preferences, political beliefs. What's not clear is this a backdoor in the apps? Rovio denied it.
Yeah,
I'm sure Google went, what, are you crazy? But maybe they're tapping into the data coming out of the apps somehow.
Rovio said it might be a third-party advertiser that they're plugging into.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that really points to what we really need is federal legislation identifying what kind of ownership you have over the information you're generating with your phone. It's such a broad spread problem. It can be exploited by so many different people, and there's so little downside to an app manufacturer putting this sort of stuff into their apps that the only thing that's going to stop them is there is a law saying that you have to have an explicit warning, you have to have explicit controls, and you have to have an easily discoverable page that says, here are switches for each piece of information that we're trying to collect from you. You can turn it on, you can turn it off. And we will, of course, default it to on. But when you installed it, we told you that here's where this page is and here's how to get it.
Did you see the golden nugget slide? Look at this slide.
Reprehensible.
Golden nugget! Exclamation mark. Top secret, by the way. Commentel, Realty, USFEY. Perfect scenario. Target uploading photo to a social media site taken with a mobile device. What can we get?
So
oh,
happy.
My God. Including,
you think they paid for that clip art?
Bad just clip side art.
I think that one of the things that is always eye-opening for me is that when you have something else and you sign in via G Plus or whatever, so for, as an example, into an app, and then it start, it, what does happen with G Plus is, of course, you get this whole list of what this is what I'm willing to give this app. And immediately I go in, I go, no, you can't have all my contacts. You know, like there's no right. reason for this app to have all those, have all that information. So you can't have all
but
my
how
contacts.
How are you going to find that's your it, friends, Mr. It. Lindsay?
Exactly. So, I go through there and turn everything off pretty, and sometimes they make it pretty manual to turn it all off. But, I think that I do like that interface, that it tells me, okay, we're going to tie into this. And there are some things that are useful to tie into and a lot of things that are not. And I want to make that choice as the user.
Yeah.
What's
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Renan. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, John Siracusa recently said that he would like to see like HIPAA-style guidelines for personal information where it can only be used for your benefit, and if it used for anything else, there has to be a lot of disclosure. But also, the penalties have to be severe enough that the app manufacturer or the service provider cares when they get discovered. Because if it's just a small fine, that's a tiny percentage of the income they derive from exploiting you, then no rule is the same as those kind of rules.
But I think that Ivan... we've been talking sometimes about the new rash of Apple ads that have been more vague and more, zephyrs hovering in the mist while chasing after kids, chase after elves while holding an iPhone sort of stuff. And I don't dislike these ads, but I look at a situation like this and I'm saying, oh, Apple put out an ad that says, here is how secure the iPhone is. And here's how hard it is for an application to get access to data that you have told it not to get access to.
That would be great.
I really want to see more ads like, because that's still something that Apple can absolutely kick everybody else's butt on. And it's not something that they put in as a response to NSA Snowden's disclosures. It's something they did simply because that is the philosophy of the company. We want to work for the best interests of the user and for nobody else. And we have set up our company so that we make our money from the users and nobody else. So we're going to be protecting the users and nobody more important than them. So I would like to see more stuff like that.
Tim Cook said that he was really impassioned, at least when he did the ABC interview, and he said that you would have to carry it out in boxes if he wanted to get their servers. And that's it's a hyperbolic statement to make, but there's a lot of people at
NSA
Apple
said
that,
good to know.
We'll bring the boxes next time.
Really passionately, and they are not they're not any happier than we are about these kinds of rumors, and they would probably make it their life's work to make it inaccessible.
Yeah.
And I think Andy's absolutely right. They should market that as a differentiator.
I agree. There are some people who would say, oh, they protest too much. They're in cahoots. But I believe them. They seem to be pretty incensed about the whole thing.
There is no company I trust more than Apple, which means I don't have blind trust in them. But if there was one company that I believe is going to defend my data and my interests, it's going to be Apple and not another company.
Right.
And it's hard to walk back the things they've said now. Like it would fundamentally alter the nature of my relationship with Apple if they turned out to be lying about any of these things.
Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. I want you to visit LegalZoom to save on your legal needs. And if you need a lawyer, you can even get a lawyer through LegalZoom. There's some things like starting a business, protecting your family with a will. They're not like your other New Year's resolutions. You can't afford to blow them off. You should be doing them. And you probably shouldn't be doing it on the back of an envelope. So, it's fine to say I'm going to snack less. I'm going to exercise more, but you really ought to also think about incorporating or forming an LLC for your new startup. You got to protect yourself. They've got a simple questionnaire at LegalZoom.com. Starts at $99, and over 1 million entrepreneurs have done it. You know what I like about LegalZoom, besides the fact that I like them and I use them? 90% of the customers like me who use LegalZoom recommend it to family and friends. A will, $69, or even a living trust. You don't need a lawyer to do this. It's quick. It's easy. You'll get peace of mind, and you'll get protection. No surprise fees, no hassles, no headaches. LegalZoom's step-by-step process was created by a team of experts in law and technology. Now, I want to tell you, they're not a law firm, but they do connect you, if you need it, with third-party attorneys. You can see the profiles and the reviews of the attorney before you sign up, and it's a pre-negotiated flat rate. So they'll help you with their self-help services. From wills to business formations, trademarks and powers of attorney, and more. LegalZoom.com. And when you visit LegalZoom.com, please use our discount code MBW. Let them know you heard it on Mac Break Weekly, and we'll give you $10 off at checkout as a way of thanking you. LegalZoom.com, $10 off when you use MBW as the offer code. We thank them so much for supporting Mac Break Weekly. Andy Inatko from the Chicago Sun-Times is here, and Inatko's Almanac on the 5x5 network, 5x5.tv. Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. He does like eight million other podcasts at the iMore Network. And good stuff, some very interesting interviews and so forth. Really well worth checking out, iMore.com. And, of course, Alex Lindsay, whose work is so secret we cannot even mention it. But I just want to point out he's in Washington, D.C. with a perfect connection to the Internet.
Mm, so is that where they're editing Star Wars 7?
Interesting. Or so he says.
It turns out they were talking about, let's do Star Wars in L.A. And I was like, why don't we do it in Washington, D.C.?
We've got a lot of fiber here. It's the natural place.
It's only two steps away from Coruscant in terms of political, opulence.
And, why not make it easier for the NSA to spy on you, right?
Exactly.
Just embrace our new overlords.
They're right down the street.
Apple's pushing deeper into mobile payments. Another Wall Street Journal article. Physical goods. Eddie Q is meeting with industry executives to discuss Apple's interest in handling payments for physical goods and services on its devices. Jennifer Bailey, who runs the online stores, has moved into a new role to build a payment business within Apple, according to three people. Not one, not two, but three people with knowledge of the move. Miss Bailey did not comment. So, Apple has sat on this passport for a while. What is it called?
Passbook.
Passbook. I don't even use it. Nobody uses it because it's got stuff in it. It's like your Starbucks card in there, but you can't really
use it, Leo.
Huh?
I use it for boarding passes, for Starbucks, for movie tickets.
Yeah. It's not living up to its potential until you can pay for it, stuff with it. Right?
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Well, this
Apple, I would love to pay with my iPhone.
Yeah.
But I think, getting back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, I mean, there is no company that is, I think, is at this point more trusted than Apple. And so that when Google started Google Wallet, there's going to be some amount of trepidation about what happens to the information that I'm giving you. Another company, there'd be some trepidation about, I'm really not sure I want to give you access to my bank accounts because I don't know if you're really secure. But if Apple decided to be a go-between my bank and anybody else I wanted to do business with, that would be fascinating to me. And I don't think there's another company that would be as capable.
Well, and they're also leaving money on the table. I mean, you can book an Uber car, have it come to you, pay for it all within your iPhone, but none of that money goes to Apple because it's all in the Uber app. Yeah. It would be a convenience for Uber, and it'd be profit center for Apple if you could pay for it with your iTunes account.
And it's a pain in the butt to have to type in your account information. Yeah. It really bummed me out the first time I used the Amtrak app to just buy my ticket from the airport back to my house, and I realized that, you're not going to just let me push a button and charge it to iTunes. Okay, I'll do it, but that would have been so slick.
Well, especially if I could just press my finger on the fingerprint reader and it just goes through.
That's the remarkable thing is Tim Cook actually said that yesterday during the conference call, which, is probably unusual, but he said we built Touch ID for a reason. We're only using it for a few things now, but it's not given. And he goes back to what they said about the demographics and how much people shop on iOS. But given the demographics we reported, you can easily see what kind of business that is. And, that's probably the closest to a forward-looking statement we'll ever get from Tim Cook on a conference call.
Yeah. Well, the numbers are strong. Apple has 575 million registered users, more than half a billion credit card numbers. So that's a lot of people. A Forrester analyst said Apple is the sleeping giant in the payments world. They have the capability. They just haven't tied it all together.
The other question is, do they have the desire? Because this is such a huge and obvious opportunity. We have a world in which everybody is terrified, or excuse me, is really, really sick and tired of identity theft. And also a world in which everybody is sick of their banks. The banks are just making things more difficult, more cumbersome. They're not evolving as fast as devices are. If Apple decided to go one step more and not simply use iTunes as a payment system, but to try to create a money services cloud sort of thing, granted, now you're into the one territory in which Apple kind of stinks, cloud services. but this is definitely an area in which some company is going to come along and absolutely change everything. Yeah. and Apple has all the pieces. The question is that Apple always wants to have a really nice, lean product portfolio that they can pay either full attention to or something that's going to pay off for them big in 2 or 3 or 4 years' time. So they might not like the distraction. Also, there's the problem of what happens when you use an iTunes transaction to pay for something and then the transmission on the car breaks and now you can't get – now you have no leverage against this company and you feel as though Apple is partly to blame for it because Apple will not invalidate this transaction that was fraudulent or a fraudulent transaction or someone who scammed you for some reason. So maybe Apple simply says that I really don't want we dodge the big bag of hurt known as Blu-ray. Why would we pick up this bigger bag of hurt known as being the mom that – these two squabbling brats come to when there's a disagreement?
They might want to intermediate it, though. I mean, do what they do on the App Store and just take a small percentage of the transaction in exchange for validating it on the device and processing it on their end.
Just as a way to say that we have this user's credit card and credit card information. We are not going to give it to you, the person. We're not going to give it to anybody, but we will verify that we have given this credit card number to the transactor who has sent back to us, and we're going to communicate back to you, the seller, that this transaction is viable and we'll go through. Because the one thing I want more than anything else is for me to be able to check into a hotel without this front desk ever seeing any of my credit cards, or to be able to pay for a meal. When I travel, even when I'm at home, I pay cash for all the meals that I take because I just don't like this idea that I'm going to give you this credit card and you're going to walk away with it and then you're going to come back and give it back to me. That just skeeves me out like nobody's business. But I would.
Need chips and NFC like Canada, Andy.
Yeah. Chip and pin, my friend.
Yeah, chip and pin.
Yesterday, Apple released its what is now becoming a regular report on national security and law enforcement orders. Apple joining a number of other companies like Google, I think, who started it, and Facebook, who are letting – these are transparency reports, letting you know what they're giving to the government. A couple of things I'd point out on this one. First of all, the raw numbers themselves, they say that they have received somewhere between 0 and 249 national security orders. That's all they can say because the national security orders don't allow you to reveal any more information than that. They've received 927 law enforcement account requests from within the United States, a total of 2,330 accounts. The number of accounts for which data was disclosed, 747. Apple objected in 102 cases. No data was disclosed in 254 cases. 81% of all requests were responded with some data. 81%. But remember the warrant canary clause that Apple included a couple of months ago in their transparency report? The quote was, Apple has never received an order under Section 215 of the USA Patriot Act. And the thinking was, well, they call it a canary because if that language were no longer to appear in the transparency report, then you know that they had received a national security letter. Clever way of revealing what they're not supposed to reveal. That language is no longer in this report. So I don't know whether you had that. Is the canary triggered? Or maybe the Fed said, you know, you can't do that. Get that out of there.
Either way, something changed.
Something changed.
Yeah. I wish I could. The numbers are encouraging when you compare it, especially on a week where we found out exactly how many devices are being just sold, not much less used. But I believe this is more of an indication of how little the government needs to actually go to the top, go to Google, go to Apple, because our lives are so leaky that it's like, I can either go through all the rigmarole of getting a warrant to search your house, or I can wait for every alternate Tuesday in which you will take all of your papers and put them on the curb, and we can just simply get there about 10 minutes ahead of the recycling truck, and we will have everything we want. I think that I wish it were as simple as saying, well, the government is not that interested in people's transactions.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing what you can get about somebody just by doing a Google search. I mean, you know, yeah. I think that when you think about the government having just a little more than that, it's amazing how much of a cloud of information can be generated without a lot of extra work.
They did say the thing that Andy wanted them to say, and maybe they should say this in a more public fashion than this PDF on the Apple website. We work hard to deliver the most secure hardware and software in the world, and we will continue to provide our customers with the best privacy protections available. Personal conversations are protected using end-to-end encryption over iMessage and FaceTime, and Apple does not store location data, map searches, or Siri requests in any identifiable form. So that's the kind of language you want to hear, right?
I want to see it in a commercial because it'll sell so many more iPads. I think so. It'll sell so many more phones.
Big update, iWork. We got AppleScript back in Numbers, the spreadsheet program in iWork. Password-protected sharing, web and mobile. Apple's keeping true to its promise. And this is what they said. We got to rewrite all this stuff to bring it up into the 21st century in 64-bit. But as a result, as we did with iMovie and Final Cut, we took stuff out, but we're going to slowly add it. And updates went out about a little less than a week ago to iWork across all platforms, iOS, OS X, and iCloud. A lot of new things, a vertical ruler.
Yeah.
In Pages, you know, customizable alignment. Huh?
I mean, even outside of the realm of Apple news, that's a gorgeous web app that should impress anybody on what's capable of, what a modern browser is capable of.
I agree. Do you have to go to iWork.com to use it, or it's part of your iCloud? I had it as beta. Is it generally available now? How does that work?
I haven't checked. I haven't fired up my Chromebook to test it out. On the old one, the previous iteration, you could just use all these great iWork tools on a $249.
It works great on a Chromebook.
I mean, so good that I think that some Mac users who are budget minded might even seriously consider if I really want an 11-inch MacBook Air, but I don't really have $1,000 to spend on that. If you can get a look at iCloud on a Chromebook, you might find that if you're using iWork as your main document store, your main document truth, and you have an easily predictable list of requirements for a notebook, you can save $750, and you will feel very, very little pain in the outcome of it.
Yeah.
But I have not tried the new one. I'd be surprised if it didn't work. Because the old version just worked like a charm.
Still says beta in the upper right hand corner. Beta.
It's open.
It's an open beta.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not developers only. Yeah. Non-developers have gotten in.
I think they're just really what's great is that they're updating this across all platforms. So a new feature on the web, for instance, is immediately reflected everywhere else and vice versa. And I think that was
the benefit of the pain that we went through.
Yeah,
they just took the iOS core and they moved it over to OS X and it hurt really badly, but now we're going to benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is great. I'm very pleased. And you're right. I mean, this is a web app. In fact, I'm running in Chrome. It looks as good as almost as good as a desktop app. I guess it does look as good as a desktop app.
And I have to say,
it's phenomenal.
The new version of iWork really threw me when they went into a single window interface, and I had a lot of fear that they had really dumbed it down in order to make it universal like that.
Yeah.
But now I've built 3-4 different really complicated presentations in Keynote, and I can't really identify anything that I've lost, anything they've taken away. There are websites that will point out to me exactly what they've taken away, or at least in the earlier versions of it. But you love it when you just get your draw in a drop attitude to realize that they simplified it and they didn't make it dumber. That's neat. That's something that Apple does very well.
I think it also undermines
all these opinions that this is all you can do. I mean, a lot of us that use Google Docs just feel like, well, that's the best you're going to be able to do on a browser. That's why it's so limited is because of the browser. And it turns out it's just limited because it's limited.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm playing with it right now.
Think about how much hell that Google got when they moved a single button in Gmail. When you have so many people who are devoted to this and who are not really fans of it and not really believers in it, but people who use it day in and day out, who simply believe that this is a hammer that they pick up and they whack things with it. Once they decide to change the shape of the handle, it's not supposed to be that shape. It's supposed to be the shape.
I'm the first one to do that with Google. It's like, you know, we do Hangouts every day. You know, we do 300 Hangouts a year, and Google is constantly changing the interface for the Hangout, and we're always like, we'll wake up one day and the buttons are in a different place, and then there's a whole bunch of emails like, why did you do that? Blah blah blah. So I definitely understand. We're the worst of those. That bunch.
Also, Google is really good in that they think of how they completely rewrote Maps. And they have a really good policy of how they roll these things out. They simply, when it's ready to for beta, they will simply give you a little pop-up that says, we have a beta new idea if right. you want to use it. If you don't want to use it, we will do nothing. And that's almost exactly yeah. what the box says. If you don't want to do this, nothing will change. It will be okay. Right. And so they get the people who are enthusiastic for the new experience while holding on to the people with the old experience. So there is a point to be made that if Google Docs works the way it does right now, it's because that's the way that Google wants it to work.
So AppleScript back in Numbers, not yet in Pages and Keynote, but perhaps soon. It's gratifying that they haven't orphaned them, that they're continuing to update sure. them, and that's really yes. good. Yeah. Yeah. I guess we can. Well, we should probably mention the Mac 30th. I feel like I've already talked a lot about it. We did a whole big thing on Twit this week. January 22nd, 1984, the Super Bowl ad. Why 1984 won't be like 1984. Yeah. Thank you. January 20th.
Sorry, I came in late.
I like it, though. That's good. Is that what was the copy? In January, Apple will release, I don't
know. At least Macintosh.
Macintosh. And you'll learn why 1984 won't be like 1984. I just remember the young woman running down with a giant sledgehammer.
I think that is the test if you're a real Mac fan or not. If you were to isolate just the grunt that woman exerts when she's throwing the hammer, if you can identify that instantly, then you are a real Mac person. Not then, I'm sorry, you can come to the party, you just can't come to the velvet rope part of the room.
Here we go. I might as well play it. We've talked enough about it. Here we go.
Glorious anniversary over the information purification.
That's supposedly IBM, right?
I always wanted to replace Earth 3 with Wilhelm.
A garden of pure ideology, where each worker may bloom, secure from the pests.
I gotta say that I have bits that are very much like those drones.
I think that's Daft Punk.
They're loose. They're comfortable. It's soft cloth. I could wear that top.
Here comes the grunt. Get ready.
One cause. Our enemies shall talk themselves to death.
On January 24th, Apple.
Think of all the grit that those guys got in their mouths. Oh my God.
And you'll see why 1984.
If you were one of the drones, like 1984. I want you to call us right now. Tell us what it was like.
Something just occurred to me that's never occurred to me, no matter how many times I've watched that. I am so surprised that at all the comic book conventions I've gone to, I've not seen one woman in that outfit. That would be the most awesome costume ever. Because everybody who would see that, they would say, oh my God, I have to get my picture with you.
Yeah, no kidding.
That is the most awesome thing ever.
No kidding. Wouldn't that be amazing?
I almost like right now, I almost want to go to Dunkin' Donuts, buy like a $100 Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks gift card, have that waiting in my wallet so that the first time I see someone, female ideally, I'll be open-minded, but really I'm looking for a woman and not a hairy guy. But again, I'm open-minded.
I think that'd be fun.
If I ever see that, I want to be able to reach in my pocket and say, please accept these $100 in pastries and high-end coffees with my compliments.
Nerds, you have your marching orders.
Yes.
So that was January 22nd. That was the Super Bowl. And 24th, Steve Jobs did that famous announcement at the Flint Center in Cupertino. It was actually a shareholders meeting. This was a prototype for future Jobs keynotes. It wasn't exactly how it would be in the future. It wasn't open to the public, for one thing. Pulls the Macintosh out of the bag, and the Macintosh talks as a Chariot of Fire's theme. And then Harry McCracken wrote about this in the Technologizer at techland.time.com. Apparently, then January 30th, Jobs went to Boston, to the Boston Computer Society. You weren't a member of the Boston Computer Society at the time, were
that
you?
That was about 3 or 4 years before my time, actually.
Harry was. He says, I've unaccountably decided not to go to that meeting. He regretted it forever. Well, if you didn't go to the meeting, here's some good news. Apparently, all the Boston Computer Society meetings were recorded on videotape with professional recording, good audio, better, in fact, than the shareholder meeting. They all were stored on U-Matic tapes and recently digitized. So if you go to this Time Magazine page, you'll see this video for the first time available to the public.
Steve Jobs from Apple Computer. We're very glad to be here tonight.
And this is the pretty much the same announcement.
It is 1958.
He goes through the history of computers.
IBM passes up the chance to buy a young, fledgling company that has just invented a new technology called xerography.
The difference is, by the way, that Jobs is now talking to enthusiasts, to potential customers. No longer is he talking to shareholders. He pulls the Mac out of the bag. The Mac talks the Chariots of Fire theme. Let's see if I can...
It has over twice the dots of the IBM PC.
Twice the dot. Oh, let's go back a little bit.
This screen has over...
Oh, I want to show you getting out of the bag.
This screen has
so hard to scrub on YouTube.
Of the IBM PC or Apple II on its screen. Very high definition. And all of this power fits into a box one-third the size and weight of the IBM PC. It's a truly transportable product.
PC came out in 81, so that was the
competition. In addition to that, there's a whole family of stuff that goes along with it. Image writer, printers, external
disk drive, modems,
carrying
cases. Look at that image writer.
Sort of security kit so your Macintosh doesn't go anywhere without you. Now... You've seen some pictures of Macintosh in these slides, but what I'd like to do now is show you the Macintosh in person. And all of the images that you will be seeing will be generated by what's in that bag right there.
So Harry says, in some ways, the shareholder meeting was a rehearsal for this. This is the more polished version of the Macintosh reveal. January 30th, 1984, 30 years ago. Plugs it in.
I'm having flashbacks to every BCS meeting in which we could not get the projector to work.
He sticks the floppy in the drive, the single 400K floppy drive. Now, they've seen probably, well, maybe they haven't. You know, this is pre-YouTube. They may have never seen this before. Probably haven't, actually. So people who think they've seen this before, you've seen the shareholders meeting video. This is truthfully a much higher quality video. The geeks are excited about this. This is a very smooth scrolling bitmap font on the Macintosh screen. That's something, you know, the Xerox Alto did, the Star did, Lisa might have done for a lot more money.
A lot of this was just the excitement of seeing things built-in features for a personal computer that would have been $800 for the specialty hardware.
Right, right.
Even just when it said, it was good to get out of that bag.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
But not unheard of, is what you're saying. Just amazing for general purposes.
It's like, no, that's not a sound card. That is, we just decided to have a speech that this is built in.
There's a really great... what is different in this is he's got the Mac team with him. You'll see, for instance, this is Andy Hertzfeld demonstrating Mac Paint.
Twice, it finishes it off for me.
Who's that? Is that Steve Capps? I don't know.
A little more freeform tool.
Much of the team is there. They're showing off the software. Woz kind of, that's not Woz, I know, but Woz, that's I think Bruce Horn, but Woz shows up in the middle unannounced to start plugging the Apple II. It's really fun. And then at the end...
Yes, the one I missed before.
This is
right, you quick stand up.
This is the question Steve did not want.
See, you missed it again.
The Apple III family, which is sort of fallen by the wayside, it seems. Is there going to be a 2E emulation mode for the 3?
What's going to happen to the Apple III?
Is there going to be continued support for the Apple III? Is that one calling you if I knew that was your question?
Steve says, I wouldn't have called on you if I'd known that was your question.
No, seriously.
And then lies.
We're shipping about 2,500 Apple IIIs a month, and 80% of those are going to people
with 100% failure rate.
IIIs, which means two things. One, the 3 is a pretty niche product,
yeah.
And two, people are really happy with them.
No.
So we anticipate making 3s until the cows come home.
Definitely not.
Cows came home to return their defective Apple IIIs.
The cows did not want the Apple III. And I think died shortly after. They also, there is a, which is really fun. This is afterwards they show the question and answer session. Here's Woz talking.
With what went before. We don't take a major extreme step that's much better, but not compatible with what happened
update.
Before. It can be done. I think a more logical way to get there is
so neat.
Apple IIs always have slots. Maybe a specific Apple II that is designed with a special slot for 8086 cards and 80 and...
So this is a great video. It's about an hour long. If you haven't had a chance to see it, it's on the Time Magazine Technologizer blog. This
it's
is
also cool. It's also cool just to see how user groups worked.
Love user
in the
groups.
Early 80s.
Yeah,
I just have such deep rooted nostalgia for these kind of videos for these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just every month 250 to 300 people of all skill levels getting together to get information that they're not going to be able to get otherwise. And these were places where, okay, so here comes Bill Gates to give a talk, and he's going to hang around for a while to chat with everybody afterward.
Yeah, isn't that great?
There are handlers there, but he knows that, oh, I'm in a user group. I don't need you here because right. I'm talking to people who are not going to, right. you know, not going to say stupid things.
Yeah. It really is. You know, BCS went dissolved a few years ago.
93, 94.
More than a few. Holy cow.
it was an implosion. In my hanging in my office over like a few doors down, I have the Boston Computer Society Mac Group trade show banner covering the entire wall of an office.
Oh, wow.
To just remind me of that non-cynical that little boy who went into a meeting and thought the world was ahead of him instead of realizing that this is a world of crushing defeat.
You had the BCS on the East Coast. We had the Berkeley Macintosh Users Group, BMUG, on the West Coast. You were going to BCS meetings. I was going to BMUG meetings. And that was really the heyday of the user group. And in many ways, I think we still need user groups, but nobody goes to them anymore.
Yeah,
so
that's
time techland.time.com if you want to watch that video. We're going to wrap things up with your picks of the week, gentlemen. Prepare them as I tell folks about Squarespace.com, the place to go for the best hosting, the best content management system. If you want to create a new website, whether it's a professional website, a blog, personal blog, an online portfolio, you want to do e-commerce, Squarespace is the place. They're constantly improving their platform. And because it's hosted, you know, all the software is hosted by them, you always get the benefit of the improvements the minute they come out. You also, by the way, don't ever have to worry about security. They keep it patched. They keep it secure for you. Beautiful designs. When you go to Squarespace.com, you'll see the big Get Started button that lets you design and use Squarespace for 2 weeks. No charge, no credit card necessary. You know, they won't ask for any personal information except your email address so they can email your password if you forget it. You start by selecting a template, 20 great templates. But what's nice about them is no matter what template you pick, you can then, without knowing any, you know, JavaScript or CSS, can completely customize it to fit your feeling, your style, what you're looking for. They have a number of customer websites using the templates so you can see what people are doing. This is apparently a good one for photographers and portfolios because I see a lot of those on this template. So I got to tell you, once you've created the site, if you are a developer, you absolutely can use. They have a great developer platform, JavaScript, CSS, but you don't have to. They've got amazing plugins. They have the ability to import your content from your existing site and export it too, so you're never trapped. I just love it. They have a new set of mobile apps. We've talked before about the blog app. This new Squarespace Metric app. There's the blog app that lets you, manage your blog. The Metrics app is very sweet. Gives you all of the information you need. Oops, I clicked the wrong button. About your metrics, including page views, unique visitors, social media follows. This is really nice to have on your iPhone or your iPad. The hosting, the whole thing, the apps, everything, very affordable. As little as $8 a month when you buy the annual plan. That is a remarkable price. That includes everything, including when you buy an annual plan, the domain name registration, so you can get a domain name there as well. And if you want to do commerce, $24 a month, and they don't take a slice. They have the unlimited plan, which is, $16 a month? I just love Squarespace. Give them a try. You got that 2-week trial, no credit card needed. Start building your website. If you decide this is it, I want to do it, make sure you use our offer code MacBreak1. You'll get 10% off on your new account. Squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button. Don't forget to use MacBreak1 if you decide to buy. We love Squarespace. They're great guys. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time now for our picks of the week. Let's start all the way over on my right here with Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. Renee?
So I realized a long time ago there's absolutely no way to keep up with Alex when it comes to picks of the week. So what I could do, though, is I got my boss, the guy who actually founded Mobile Nations, he ordered the new Mac Pro. It didn't arrive yet, but his three 4K monitors did.
What?
He ordered the Dells when they were on sale at Newegg. And by sale, I mean they were only like $3,000 instead of $4,000 or something. And he, like any self-respecting nerd, he wasn't going to let them just sit there. So he started trying to see if he could hook them up to his MacBook Pro. He started out by putting, you know, all three of them in, and it didn't really work because they could drive two of the displays, but the one in the HDMI port would be blank. So he unplugged that, and he found out if he plugged just two of them in, they would in fact work. There were a few problems, like Chrome does not really work on 4K. You have to do a bunch of hacks to get Chrome to work. So if you're a Chrome user,
well,
they update it like 8 times a day, so I'm sure they'll get to
it. Well, it reminds me a lot of when the Retinas came out and Chrome looked crappy for a while.
Chrome on Mac is like almost like one of those movie sets where it looks like a real house. You go behind it and it's held up by So I mean, you can hack it together. The 30 hertz refresh rate. He says you get used to it after the cursor moves around for a little while, but he's now got an ungodly amount of pixels. It'll be better when OS 10 properly supports the sort of scaling that they do on Retina displays, where they take real Retina images and downscale them and then size the interface appropriately. Because right now it's either really big or really small, but apparently you get used to that too. But I just like the idea that even on a Retina MacBook Pro, that amount of pixels cannot be enough for a human being. And if you have the money to spend, you can get a couple of 4K screens right now, not in February or March when your Mac Pro ships, and enjoy them immediately.
And we should mention the reason you have the Apple TV up. There is an article on your, by the way, that 4K display is an article on iMore.com, right?
Yes, that's it. We put up a help article. If you want to do that at home, if you have a couple spare 4K screens laying around.
See, I have the Mac Pro. I'm the opposite. I have the Mac Pro. I don't have the 4K screens. And I don't think I will either. You point out that there is a tab now on the Apple Store. You know, it's always said Shop Mac, Shop iPad, Shop iPhone. There's still a Shop iPad tab, but there's now a Shop Apple TV tab. Nothing new to say. But you speculate, and you might be right, there's something new coming. You think?
Yeah, both Mark Gurman and iLounge had articles up in the last couple of days saying that they'd heard from their sources that an update was coming up. I've heard similar things, but also, and I think I said this before, if you know where to look, the talent that has been transferred to the Apple TV division over the last half a year or so is astounding within Apple. So, I mean, just the abilities of those people alone means there's something pretty special coming.
Yeah, interesting. We shall watch with great interest. You think it's just a software update, or is there new hardware?
Any really meaningful software update, something that would let it run apps or let it run games, would require new hardware because there's just so little.
Right.
I mean, it's an A5 chip, single core A5 chip, and it's only 8 gigabytes of NAND flash memory, which is really too little to do anything substantial with.
Right.
So if they're going to get into gaming, if they're going to get into entertainment programming, they're going to need to soup it up quite a bit.
Seems like the A7 would just be great in it.
If you're good in everything, Leo.
Yeah.
Good everywhere.
But I want an A7 in my house.
Alex Lindsay in Washington, D.C., your pick of the week.
It's cold here.
Is it?
No.
Is it?
Yeah, it's cold. It's really cold. But I can tell exactly because of my pick of the week.
Uh-huh.
I can tell exactly what it's like. Have you seen the dark sky?
Yeah.
I really, weather means a lot, you know, for our productions, and it really, it is so cool. All right, I'm sorry. It's obviously cool to see that it's overcast and it's 18 and rising, but it feels like it's 12.
Oh.
And you go through it and this little graph of exactly. I mean, it's just a really well designed, pretty app that visually tells you everything that you want when you're looking at it. And and I don't know. It's like, you know, they spend a lot of money on the weather for broadcast as well. And you don't know if you need all of this, but it sure makes the weather fun to watch. You know, and you know, there's so many things that there's so much information. So if I scroll sideways, of course, I get more information. But if I scroll do a kind of a quick scroll down, I get, you know, the actual 3D Earth with the actual live weather of, you know, precipitation and clouds. And I can do precipitation or temperature, and I can close that. You know, I can, you know, there's just so much information packed into it. But again, it doesn't, you know, overwhelm you. Like, so for instance, where it says overcast 18, feels like if I tap that, I get to see wind is 4 miles an hour, humidity is 35%, pressure, you know, is 1028 MB and falling, visibility is 9.8 miles. I don't know if I need all this stuff, but I love the fact
I love the
that it's sitting in one application and it's so well built and pretty. Anyway, it's the best weather app, you know, ever made. And I just love the fact that somebody went through the trouble to make this. And I was quite happy to spend $3.99, the cost of a latte, on having this super awesome app and just really showing you how all this big data, you know, I know it's a big term, but you know, all this data that oftentimes, you know, kind of escapes us of being available is available and can now be on our iPhone. So anyway, it's really cool.
Buck 99.
Dark Sky.
Is Jack it Adam. Yep. Jack Adam. I'm sorry. $3.99.
Yeah.
I just made it cheap.
Stupid lot. I was like, did it drop while I was
there? Hey, so. Buck here, buck there, you know, it's exactly. Worth it. Based on forecast.io, which is I keep that bookmarked on my web browser because it's all the same content and it's just great. Love it. Good choice. Dark Sky. I gave it a discount, but they didn't.
Tell him Leo sent you.
Tell him I told him. Cut that price. Andy Yannotko, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week was a weather app called Dark Sky.
No.
Yes, it was.
Oh, my God.
I don't understand on ceremony, but we have a Google Doc in which nobody had picked that, and I picked it first. And so, but that's all right. That's fine. That's fine. Whatever.
I meant to put it in earlier.
That just goes to show.
Andy wins.
You owe me a dollar. Next time you see me, you have to give me a dollar.
Okay, Andy. Okay.
or maybe I get to keep the MacBook now, power brick you left in my house about a year and a half ago that I keep meaning to send back, but didn't. But it's just an endorsement. It's an endorsement for the app. The other thing, I was talking about this earlier, that I think it's one of that first generation of iOS 7 apps that show you exactly why it was so important for Apple to make such a big change. It's a gorgeous app that's absolutely 100% task focused and provides minimal amount of information and clutter to provide the maximum amount of mission purpose. And so that's what I like. So instead, I'll choose two alternative picks, which I just ran out of the studio into the living room to get. Moonrise Kingdom, which I just bought on Amazon.
Love that movie.
Which Wes Anderson is a very divisive sort of filmmaker because a lot of people think he just does these little, real like twee sort of things. This is, I think, the best movie he's made yet because you have to understand that it's the really distinctive set design and direction, the flat direction, the props, the cuteness. It really isn't in service of a larger story. And it's rare that you see. I love the fact that this is just a very, very simple but very, very beautiful little story about two kids and their first crush. And now this is sort of a pre-tease. This is Diana Domrau's new CD, one of my favorite operatic sopranos. This is a combination of Strauss and Broadway, believe it or not. And so when she's absolutely fantastic. If you want to do a Google search for her work at La Strada's, she's at La Strada doing La Boheme, I think, or it's just finished that run right now. Do some YouTube searches for some videos from that, just to show you exactly how fantastic she is. When I found out that her next album would also have like stuff from West Side Story and The Phantom of the Opera and The Wizard of Oz and Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and Mary Poppins. Realize she's a when she's singing when she's singing stuff from My Fair Lady, she is a German who is trying to sing the part of a Cockney in German.
So
it's
like
it's in German, but it's exactly these kind of songs don't often work out. Because you'll have, like, you know, Plácido Domingo singing, I could have done Einstein-ite. But she really knows how to she knows how to suit her instrument to suit the material, and it really is just absolutely light and beautiful. Diana Damrow singing Stephen Sondheim, that's worth it. Unfortunately, it's not available in the U.S. yet because we're dummies and we don't like beautiful music. But you can special order it, and it's about the cost of a regular CD anyway. If anybody at Warner Classics is listening to this, I've been trying to get the U.S. release date because I actually waited like a month and a half thinking that it was going to be released in the U.S. Then I emailed them directly and they said, oh, it is available in the U.S. And I said, no, it isn't. And they didn't know what someone at your company thinks it's being released at the U.S., but it hasn't been yet and it needs to be released because it's really, really quite cool. That's my desperate alternative picks of the week. If CVS brand flexible bandages. 90% of all all infections are not due to tsetse flies, due to a simple cut that has not been sterilized and dedicated. With this budget brand flexible fabric, it's slightly waterproof and smells really good after 3 days, and you haven't changed it yet. CVS flexible fabric.
Patterson in our chat room gave the single most incorrect thumbnail of Moonrise Kingdom that is actually factually perfectly correct. He said it's a Bruce Willis movie. And it's technically true.
And it's like, I want to see Bruce Willis do more roles like this.
Technically true, but it's not a Bruce Willis.
No, he was clearly cast to type. Yeah. But with the awareness that Bruce Willis cannot only be the guy who like climbs into a dangerous situation to save someone, but he can also be the guy who is very, very sad and disappointed with himself and the world around him.
And by the way, I will have to take issue with one thing you said. It is not Wes Anderson's best movie. That title goes to The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Okay.
But we can argue.
I will amend that happily too. There, I don't believe that he has made a better film than Moonrise.
That may
Kingdom.
Be true. Yeah. I love Moon, and he's got a new one coming out. What is that? Istanbul Hotel or something?
The hotel
something.
I can't remember.
Looks good.
Yeah. It's
and the undersea world of Steve Zissou or what's his name Zissou is very good too.
Yes.
But I think Fantastic Mr. Fox. So that's my personal vote. So, and the Royal Tenenbaums, now you can't, you see? You can't.
I don't think I'm smart enough for Wes Anderson.
That's going to be one hell of a box set.
It's an acquired taste.
I get about halfway through them and I'm like, okay, it's not, I fall asleep.
Yeah.
there's not enough edits.
The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Is a long shot.
Alex? Now, do you have just like a gaping void in your chest, or when they took out your heart, did they put like something hard and black and cold in its place?
I don't sleep very much, so I'm really good as long as things keep moving. And so, but if I sit down and if we get to like slow edits,
all I will say is that there is a scene in which Bill Murray emerges from a closet, naked from the chest up, holding a bottle of red wine in one hand and an axe in the other, and modestly announces, I'm going to go in the backyard and find something to chop down, and then walks across the scene and leaves from the other door.
In this kind of oddly constricted set. Any movie with Bill Murray is a good movie, I think. Well, I'm just going to move. I'm just going to say we've spent enough time on all of this and say I move for adjournment, ladies and gentlemen.
Seconded.
Do I hear any nays? All in favor? Let's go.
Aye.
The motion carries.
So say we all.
So say we all. Rene Ritchie is at imore.com. A better place there is not for Mac News, but all sorts of great stuff, too. And you'll find it on the web in your favorite browser. His podcasts are there, too. Thank you, Rene, for being here. And I bet you can top Alex Lindsay's polar vortex of 18 degrees.
It was so cold, my mom called me and said she was watching TV in gloves. I was blogging with my hoodie up. It was just no amount of heat could counteract it.
But Canadians are made for that weather. They're made for it.
What I don't understand, Leo, is that people crossed from Siberia over the land bridge and then were so tired of walking, they stopped in the Arctic Circle. And the ones who kept walking to Florida hated them so much, they never went back and told them it got warmer.
By the way, the Darjeeling Limited is not on that list.
I would agree.
Yes.
Not every movie can be amongst his very best movies. No. I would say that Moonrise Kingdom is one. I would agree with Fantastic Mr. Fox, Moonrise Kingdom, and Tannenbaums as his three very best.
Excellent movies.
But I don't think he's ever made a bad movie.
Yeah. I hope if you have not seen any of these, you go out, and I hope you do not have Alex Lindsay's reaction. Alex is in Washington, D.C. for reasons.
I think they're great movies. I just fall asleep.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a really good movie.
They're soothing.
Exactly.
They're like lullabies.
Alex Lindsay is in Washington, D.C. for no apparent reason. We won't delve deeper. But he is also at thepixelcore.com, and you can follow him at Alex Lindsay for further clues.
Yes. Lots of posts on G+, usually.
Yes, G+, probably the better place, yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, the wonderful, the talented Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. We gather together, all of us. What is that picture? Is that Area 51? What is that?
No, that is, I believe, the Opportunity rover on Mars.
Oh, that's Mars.
10 years.
We got a pano of Mars from a 10-year-old rover.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. And
I like the fact that we're all for, like, you know, international, like, brotherhood of scientists, but there are a whole bunch of people who could not help but point out that, yeah, we've had Mars rovers that were supposed to last a month, and they've been running for 10 years. China, oh, too bad that your 30-day lunar rover only crapped out after about 10 days. I think it's adorable you even tried.
Don't be mean.
Everyone, let's say good job, China, Lunar Rover
job,
team.
Good China. Job. Good job, China. That is as APOD.
Legitimately, I'm glad they're putting probes on.
Yeah.
First photo. If you look up in the corner, this is when it first landed. And now this is after a decade of Martian finds.
It needs a Ouija guy.
Yeah.
Look at that. It's a little dusty.
A little dusty.
But it's there and it's working. See, we got a pano.
That is the inside of your cheese grater Mac Pro. Huh? After selfie. About 8 months of
No, that's time. A selfie, but there's also a pano that it sent back. Yeah. Really a beautiful pano. Yes, that's right. It's a rover selfie.
Martian probe selfies.
I'm a little dusty, but and somewhat the worse for wear. But
it's
alive.
Leo. That's how it lasted so long.
It's amazing.
We were made to suffer. It is our lot in life.
It is. I've got a pain on the diodes all up and down my left side. We do this show 11 a.m. Pacific every Tuesday. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. If you watch live, you will be rewarded somehow, maybe in a later life. If you do not, you will always
be able to. In a future life.
In a future life. You will always be able to watch on-demand audio and video after the fact, twit.tv/MBW or on youtube.com/MacBreakWeekly, probably.
Yep.
Or, on your favorite podcatcher. Try iTunes. I hear it's good. Thanks for being here. Now get back to work because break time is over. Like a man.